Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcher List podcast network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcher List's bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. It's freezing here in Boston. It's like 8 degrees or something out.
Wind chill factor.
Yeah. saw something about it being like the coldest December here sometime, maybe ever. So yeah, that's I'm enjoying or not enjoying the weather out here. I like the cold, but not this cold. But it does feel more, you know, around the holidays. The last couple Christmases have felt very warm, and it's like kind of it's weird when you're like going out on Christmas morning and it's like 55, 60 degrees. I'm sure you're used to that out there.
Yeah, very used to that
in New England and in the Boston area. It is weird. So having a cold winter Christmas, you know, I don't technically hate it. It's just, yeah, we'll see how this, if we get a ton of snow, that could be an issue.
But you're wearing a t-shirt?
I'm wearing it. Well, it's warm in here. So I'm in my apartment. I don't pay for heat. That's the one perk here. So we're at least able to stay warm inside. Yeah.
I have not been able to stay warm inside because the company I work for closed down a couple weeks ago. But we're still working through some stuff. However, to save costs, they just have not been running the heat. So I'm just in a big office with maybe four other people. So nobody's providing me heat. I don't have a space heater with me either. Dude. So it is freezing in there. I mean, it's only like 50 degrees outside, so it's not insane, but it's 50 degrees inside too. So I am just freezing my butt off all day long. It's nice to be at home right now where my mom does not mind having the heat on. So doing fine right now, but it is funny that you're talking about it being 8 degrees and I'm dressed more warmly than you are.
Yeah, I know. It's we try to keep, and we have a nice we have a gas fireplace here. It's nice. Mm-hmm. That's the one one perk I'll say. Yeah,
in a apartment.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's crazy.
It's nice. It's yeah.
Great. All right. Well, stay warm, Rick, because we got a lot to talk about today. We have all the transactions from the past couple of weeks, which includes the non-tenders that occurred basically right after we finished recording the last podcast. So any member of a ball club that a team did not tender a contract to, who is eligible for arbitration, was immediately regarded as a free agent. We had only one of those pitchers has signed since then, but that did add to the free agent relief pool. There's a few interesting names on there. We had some big relief pitcher signings across the past couple of weeks as well. And then we'll touch on some injuries and news. And then we will head on over to our main topic and discuss relievers that were both unlucky and lucky last year. Those are two separate lists of relievers. We'll talk about some relievers who overperformed their underlying metrics and relievers who underperformed their underlying metrics. But we'll start it off with those aforementioned non-tenders. I'll go in groups of three so we can make sure we talk about some people, and we did talk about these guys in our last podcast because they were designated for assignment prior to their non-tendering, which is the case for a lot of these guys. So we may have touched on some of these guys already, but the first trio is Colin Holderman, Dory Moretta, and Sean Reynolds.
Yeah, I know we definitely talked about Moretta last time. I don't remember, was Reynolds also? He might have been, but yeah, we're both big fans of Moretta. I think he'll land a major league deal somewhere and be in an opening day bullpen as long as he's healthy. Reynolds is definitely another interesting one who's just run out of options, but you know, limited sample size at the major league level, but he has, you know, there are some skills there. I mean, he throws 97, 98. He's a big dude. Slider has shown some swing and miss ability before, and he really, I mean, it was 11, we kind of got excited in 11 innings in 2024 with him, and obviously that's a small sample size and it didn't work out last year, but I do think that there could be something here with Reynolds if he can get his command shored up again. It's a fun one. I think Holderman too, it's, you know, is he healthy? Someone's definitely going to take a chance on him. I just don't know, you know, where that's going to be or what type of role he'll get.
The next three are Evan Phillips, Joey Lucchese, and Jorge Alcala. I think Phillips is the most notable name here, and maybe the honestly, almost clearly the most notable name
on,
this list.
Yeah. And he obviously that reason is, you know, he's going to miss most of, if not all of next year. When did he had Tommy John in like June, July, I think it was. So, he's probably out for most of this year. But yeah, he's one of those classic, like he'll get some team will give him a 2-year deal, try to rehab him this year and then hope for him to have, you know, be a big part of their bullpen in 2027. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, these guys almost always get DFA'd. That's why I thought AJ Puck might have a chance to get non-tendered as well. He's kind of in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Phillips will definitely look out for him as a 2027 bounce back candidate. Because yeah, we've, you know, not someone to completely forget about for the long run. But yeah, 2026, there's probably not going to be much for Phillips. Maybe in September we see him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was June 2025 Tommy John surgery Phillips. So possible he misses all of the 2026 campaign, like you said, with the small possibility of a late season debut. The next trio of arms are Mark Leiter Jr., Scott Efros, and Jake Cousins. Are those all Yankees?
Might as well add Ian Hamilton.
Ian Hamilton in there.
Yeah, those Yankees guys who all of them, maybe not Efros, with the Cubs, he had some value, but, you know, mm-hmm. Leiter Jr., Cousins for a second, and even Ian Hamilton, you know, they had, you know, at one point or another, they were factoring into hold situations for the Cubs and or the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Cousins are also with the Brewers look good. And then he kind of had a resurgence. Those was last year, 2 years ago, and then he got hurt again. But those are all guys I expect to get looks. Probably can make a major league team out of the spring. Mm-hmm. The other guys, not so sure. But yeah, Leiter's always been interesting. I don't think New York was a good landing spot for him. So I think if he gets in a spot where there's, you know, plenty of opportunities, he could easily rise into a setup role somewhere. A lot of bullpens out there right now that are still, like, you know, there's just a lot of moves need to be made to make them major league ready. So mm-hmm. there's opportunities out there for Leiter.
Right, and these guys seem to have higher ceilings than other arms on the market, considering what they've done in the past.
If Cousins is healthy, yeah, that's another name to look out for sure.
All right, the next three are Cam Boozer, Jason Foley, and Taylor Clark. Foley's been a closer before, and Cam Boozer's a southpaw, which is hard to come across on this free agent market.
Yeah, he, I know, left-handed, and any lefty at this point definitely helps, because it's free agency and in the trade market, they're just teams are really looking for lefties wherever they can find them. So I think Boozer probably signs pretty quickly. He had some success with the White Sox and the Red Sox before that. We talked about Foley last week, and I don't know if we talked about Taylor. Taylor Clark's an interesting one. He was one of the more surprising ones on this list for me. That he had a really good year with the Royals last year. Fits in nicely as a middle relief option. He's not a setup guy or a closer, but he had one of his better seasons last year in Kansas City. I thought that was an easy, guy they bring back. But the Royals are going a different direction, and I think Clark's another guy who should easily get a major league deal somewhere. A lot of experience there.
Definitely. All right, and the next four we'll hit on are Josh Spores, Jacob Webb, Gregory Santos, and Trent Thornton. Definitely some interesting names here. All of these guys have either had success, that too. They've also had success, or they throw really hard, Santos and Webb.
Santos has, when he's healthy. He's only 26. It's crazy. I was thinking about that whole Prelander Baroa trade with him and him being traded for Santos, and just like a trade that didn't work out for anyone really.
Right.
Which is, I feel, rare. At least one team typically benefits, one player benefits, but I think Santos, you know, being 26 will easily get, I don't know if he gets a major league deal, but there's, there's definitely some upside there. I think most of his injuries have been like, I don't think they've been necessarily arm related either. I think he had like a knee thing last year. So I wouldn't give up on him yet. The Rangers guys are interesting to me, at least Webb, because it's the 2 years in a row where he's been DFA'd after having like a pretty good season, like a really like just solid middle relief innings, was only due about, I think, $2 million. And I know the Rangers are really trying to cut back on payroll, and they're like not looking to spend any money at all. But I don't know. I feel like that's just like for a bullpen that has nothing going right now, like that bullpen's empty outside of Robert Garcia. I would have felt at least Webb comes back. Spores I get because of the injury last year, and he didn't bounce back from it as well as they had hoped for. But even still, like I still like Josh Spores when he's healthy. A guy who I don't know what his cost would have been in arbitration, but I don't know. Those two guys, I thought, like, you know, a bullpen that has really no depth in it, those two guys made sense for them. So maybe they come back on cheaper deals or whatnot. But yeah, that's, you know, for a bullpen that needs help and is trying to, you know, spend as little money as possible to fill their bullpen, I felt like Spores and Webb would have made sense for the Rangers still.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the last player who was non-tendered by their previous ball club was Sam Henches. And this transitions perfectly into talking about the signings from the past couple of weeks, because Henches recently signed with the Giants on a 1 year, $1.4 million deal. The Southpaw missed all of the 2025 campaign with a shoulder injury. He had surgery, but he had success in the past when he pitched for the Guardians. We saw a 3 year span from 2022 to 2024 where he pitched to a sub three ERA with a strikeout rate of nearly 28%. So he's had success in the past. Just coming off this injury, I have faith that the Giants will be able to help him recover the form that made him one of the best relievers in that Guardians bullpen before his injuries.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't pitched in a while, but obviously when healthy, he's been, you know, an awesome left-handed reliever. Again, we're talking about lefties being in short supply, high demand. You know, this is one of the more upside guys to take a chance on if you're the Giants. And I'm still a little bit surprised. I mean, a little surprised in the $1.4 million for a major league deal for a guy who hasn't pitched in a year and a half. But yeah, I guess when as far as lefties go, that's kind of the going rate. The Giants bullpen, another bullpen that's just like kind of like the Rangers, where there's like yeah, Ryan Walker's going to be in it, but after that, it's like I don't really know. It's very wide open. Lots of opportunities should be there. So you know, they have Eric Miller there still, who was really lucky last year to have the ERA he had. But yeah, I feel like Henches should be better than him. And yeah, they DFA Lucchesi kind of became their like top left-handed setup guy towards the end of the year. So Henches could fill right in for him.
Right. Moving forward with the rest of our signings, we have some more significant ones, starting with Phil Maton, who signed with the Cubs. It's a 2 year, $14.5 million deal that includes a club option for a third season that would be for 2028. He enters right into the hold situation for the Cubs. It's possible he challenges Palencia for that closer role. We saw him close out some games with the Rangers after being traded by the Cardinals at the deadline last year. But Maton had a career year last year with a nearly 33% strikeout rate and a 2.79 ERA. But I would expect him to be, if he doesn't end up being the closer, probably the top setup man in Chicago.
Yeah, he's at least a seventh, eighth inning guy there. I think that's ideally the role you want him to be in. And it's not even just because he doesn't throw hard. It's just, he hasn't had success in the closer role. I know there was a game last year when the Rangers kind of tried him out in the role and it just didn't really work. And he seemed to really be frustrated by that. But I mean, I know there is some mixed kind of, takes on his signing with the Cubs, especially being like, I think he was, I mean, outside of Iglesias being the first, you know, big RP to move. And I think Cubs fans should be excited. I mean, that's a fair deal for him. I know 2024 was questionable, but I'm not, I think 2024 is more of the outlier. I think he's had a longer track record, especially when he was with Houston. He was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this past season, he kind of went back to that 2023 pitch usage or 2024 pitch usage. You know, add his fastball, gain some velocity, or his cutter. It's really a cutter. Gain some velocity. Still not hard, but he just went from like 88 to 90, which is, you know, going to make a little bit of a difference. And yeah, just the overall cutter had better shape, better zone rate. Curveball is also better, you know, better locations with it. So yeah, I think it's a different guy than like Brad Keller coming in throwing 97, 98 out of the bullpen for them. But I think he gets similar results from Maton as you did with Keller.
Right. It's not the flashiest signing, especially considering his fastball velocity, but I do think that sort of gives you more confidence in his longevity. Not only is his arm not going to fall off, but also he's somebody that doesn't rely on the fastball velocity. So as that decreases, as he gets older, it shouldn't slow him down as much because he's somebody who focuses more on locations and movement of his pitches and the unique movement profiles of his breaking balls.
The curveball is a crazy pitch, but then the cutter that he's able to throw at 90, his mean fastball is a cutter at 90 miles per hour that he locates at the top of the zone more than any other pitcher. I mean, it's still like you think like, all right, 90 miles per hour over at the top of the zone, hitters would hammer it, but it's similar to how Paul Sewald had success. Like they just, he's able to locate it and mix in that curveball as well. Has a ton of success. So yeah, I think they're, you know, for 2 years, you should be good. And even that third season might be a value as well.
A less significant major league signing occurred by the Braves. They re-signed Yoel Piamps to a 1 year, $2.25 million deal. And I guess I will also throw in the signing of Southpaw Danny Young. He signed a split contract, which means he'll be paid different amounts, whether he pitches in the majors or the minors. If Young pitches in the majors, he'll earn $925,000. So Piamps and Danny Young to the Braves.
Yeah, Piamps was a little surprised at the money. I didn't know what he didn't do much last year at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize he was with the Braves at the end of the
barely
year.
Pitched with them.
Yeah, and didn't really have a ton of success at AAA for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a major league arm who at least gives them some depth, especially if Joe Jimenez isn't ready for opening day. Danny Young is a little bit also surprising because they have, you know, they have some lefties there in Dylan Lee.
I think he's recovering from Tommy John.
Oh, that's right.
Which so, I didn't recognize that until right now. So pretty small chance that he does pitch in the majors this next year.
Yeah. So just long-term late season depth maybe. But yeah, because they have Dylan Lee, Bummer, Dylan Dodd,
Ryan Rollison.
Yeah. but at least those top three have, you know, pretty solid lefties for them out of the bend. But yeah, I mean, left-handed depth, I guess, why not?
Right. Next, we have probably the second most significant signing from the past couple of weeks, and that's Ryan Helsley signing with the Orioles. There was a lot of talk about him possibly becoming a starter, which was confusing considering his reliance on just two pitches. It didn't really make much sense for a hard-throwing righty who really relies on two pitches to transition to the rotation, but we won't have to worry about that as Helsley signed for 2 years and $28 million to go to Baltimore. He will have the ability to opt out after year one, which is 2026, but Helsley should slot right into the closer role in Baltimore, which sort of sucks for Andrew Kittredge, who got traded there earlier in the offseason. But it looked like Kittredge had a good chance to close, but now he will just be one of the better setup men in the AL East. But Ryan Helsley, the closer in Baltimore.
Yeah, you called the last time we talked, by the way, during our last podcast. I think the interesting thing here is, Kittredge obviously kind of loses all momentum as a closer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this is more money than I thought Helsley was going to get, but then looking into it a little bit deeper, I see the, you know, there's a couple things that can be fixed, and I think he gets back to where he was in 2024, and it starts with the pitch tipping issue, obviously, you know, fix that. But yeah, his fastball locations last year were not ideal. You know, low location fastball was 94th percentile. High location was only 13th percentile. He was, you know, down 8% from before. So like, you know, for a guy who's throwing 99-100, like with pretty good IVB, 17 inches of ride of IVB, I believe, like you got to live up in the zone with your fastball. Don't be, you know, dotting at the bottom of the zone. Unless you're actually like hitting corners. But yeah, that's plus his slider put away percentage was down 10%, which I feel down 10% last year and like pretty much 10% over the last 3 or 4 years. So I feel like that slider, that fastball location gets, you know, back up in the top of the zone. He starts getting ahead of hitters. First pitch strike was down as well. That slider comes back with the fastball up in the zone, first pitch strikes, getting ahead of hitters. I feel like there's an easy path for him to get back to 2024. And for him, you know, having that opt out too, if he has a good season, easy for him to just, you know, opt out and get a longer term contract next year. Cause he's still only of the relievers like available in free agency. He's on the younger side. So I think he's like 30 at this point. So for reliever, that's not old, I guess. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a good sign for the Orioles. And yeah, I think he should be their closer year round, unless they have another bad season and he gets traded midway through. But yeah, I like this for Baltimore.
All right. And right after Helsley signed, we had the consensus number two closer on the market sign, and Devin Williams went to Queens. He signed with the Mets for 3 years and $51 million. He'll get a $6 million signing bonus, which will be paid in $2 million installments. He'll get $15 million a year. $5 million of his contract will be deferred each season. The signing was curious considering we all thought that the Mets would be looking to re-sign Edwin Diaz, and the signing doesn't count out Edwin Diaz returning to the Mets, but it does make it far from a necessity now, because Devin Williams, one of the top relievers in baseball, really was unlucky last year. He'll be one of the guys we talk about later on in this podcast, mm-hmm. but 4.79 ERA last year with the Yankees. It really seemed like he struggled in New York, but it was definitely a situation where the home run to fly ball ratio was a bit off. And I think you do as well, have a lot of confidence in Williams returning to form, which would make him one of the best closers in baseball, especially pitching for a team that finds itself in a lot of winning situations like the Mets.
Yeah, a couple of things here, and we're going to get into like his unluckiness later on. So not even related to that, but you know, seeing a lot of Mets fans, Mets Twitter being like, you know, this is a good move as long as they bring back Edwin Diaz. And it's like, yeah, that would be awesome. That would be cool. Like to have $40 million a year spent on two relievers. I guess if you're the Mets, you can afford it. But I mean, Devin Williams should be, I'm fairly confident as long as he's healthy the next year, he's a top five or six closer. So I wouldn't sleep on, you know, you're saving, this is a better deal than whatever Edwin Diaz is going to get. I think when you, you know, factor in the financials of it, I would rather Williams at
better deal for the team.
Yeah. For the team. I'd rather Williams at three at 51 than Edwin Diaz at five and 100, whatever. Yeah. 100 plus. Especially if that allows you to be more, you know, to go out and resign Alonso or do whatever you got to do. You know, there's other holes with the Mets. So they have other things to do here. They still have holes in their bullpen, but I don't think they need a closer necessarily with Williams there. I think they need to add some depth to it. And the whole thing with him, like wanting to leave New York and like he needed to leave New York. It's like, I think this is part of the reason why he signed with the Mets, is to like kind of prove everyone wrong that like I can still pitch. I'm able to pitch in New York. Like all that is nonsense.
I've always thought of like the he can't pitch in New York thing as almost like a Yankees specific situation.
Because
the fan base is so rabid.
Yeah, definitely part of that. And like we saw with like Sonny Gray talking about the Yankees this past week. There is very, you're either loved or hated there with the Yankees. And if you, you know, have he had like two bad weeks and the Yankees fans turned on him, and Then he was awesome for the second half of the year and into the postseason. So yeah, I think this is kind of like, you know, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to be a dominant closer. I'm hoping he closes. I do think Edwin Diaz, I think they're still talking to Edwin Diaz, but I don't see him returning. I think it's probably going to be the Dodgers or the Blue Jays at this point, because the Blue Jays just want to sign everyone. But I wouldn't rule out the Giants either, even though they said they didn't want to spend too much on a closer, but I feel like that just makes a lot of sense for the Giants. But yeah, I think Devin Williams, and then go out and get, like, you know, add a supplemental reliever, like Luke Weaver or Brad Keller or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be okay, for now, and then figure it out, transition some stars to the bullpen if you had a starter. So the Devin Williams, like, I didn't see like anyone, any Mets fans, any Mets Twitter being like, oh, this is, he'll be a good closer for us. It's like, no, he need, like, we need Edwin Diaz back. It's like, that's not likely. And I don't think you need Edwin Diaz back. I know you've had, you know, this is a Mets fan base who wanted to run Edwin Diaz out of town like 2 years ago too, when he was struggling. So it's, you know, that's just, you talk about New York fans, and same with Boston, same with Philly, and on the West Coast, I'm sure as well. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, Mets fans should be really happy with the signing, regardless of whether or not Edwin Diaz comes back, because this Devin Williams is going to be a top five or six closer if he is a closer next year.
Right. And you're getting him for a pretty significant discount over Edwin Diaz, and then can use that money then on a cheaper reliever, or, like you said, upgrades elsewhere on the roster. Our last trio of signings begins with Connor Brogdon, who signed a one-year $900,000 deal with the Guardians. He pitched for the Angels last year and was not great, 5.5 ERA. He did strike out 25% of batters and did have an xFIP that was more than a run lower than his ERA, but he's not somebody that has had like wild amounts of success. He was pretty good for the Phillies a couple of years ago, but he just hasn't really put it together. I think he missed all or most of 2024 with injuries, and that could be what has led to his sort of downfall in this past season. But maybe it's also the jumping around different teams and such. But the Guardians have shown a propensity to turn unknown relievers into really good ones. So going to Cleveland could be a good move for both Brogdon and the Guardians.
Yeah. Cleveland is a, you know, ideal landing spot for a pitcher or reliever, especially too. I think that's, as long as there's, you know, there should be, I think, a spot for him opening day. I wonder if he kind of fills in that Jacob Junis role that, like, you know, because I think Brogdon did kind of get stretched out a little bit, was able to go multiple innings, a couple outings. So yeah, that's always kind of been an intriguing arm. Surprised he got a major league deal still, but yeah, Brogdon is a good fit for, you know, landing in Cleveland's always a good spot for a reliever.
Definitely. Next, we have the last real significant one before we touch on a very minor one, and that's Emilio Pagan returning to the Reds on a two-year $20 million deal that allows him to opt out after the first season. Not really surprising, considering the amount of success that Pagan had in Cincinnati the past couple of years. Last year, 32 saves, 2.88 ERA, and an even 30% strikeout rate. It does sort of suck for guys like Tony Santion and Graham Ashcraft and some of the other young arms there that were looking to vie for the closer role in 2026. Yeah. But with Pagan having so much success last year, it not only makes sense for the Reds and for Pagan, but it also suggests there's going to be zero questions about who's closing for the Reds, at least to open next season.
Yeah, it's a relatively low risk too. I mean, 2 at 20 isn't going to like kill you financially.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted him. I kind of wanted to see him outside of Cincinnati, outside of that ballpark.
Right. The home run stuff still scares me a little bit.
Yeah, because there's definitely some regression due there. Is it going to be enough to push him out of the role eventually? It could. He was really lucky, and especially against lefties last year, he was the best year he had against left-handed hitters. been very lucky overall. His splitter BABIP, which, you know, the splitters of his pitch, he tries to, you know, dominant lefties against, his splitter BABIP's typically over 360. It was 362 in 22, 364 in 23, 455 in 24. And then last year it was 182. So I just worry about, you know, left-handed hitters getting to him again next year, and that ERA and the WHIP starts going up. I do see there's a world where the Reds end the season with, like, you know, Connor Phillips and Zach Maxwell and Graham Ashcraft as, like, their, you know, top three in their bullpen. I feel like with both Pagani and Santillan, who we're going to talk about a little bit, as a kind of luck, he was luckier last year than, you know, we might have thought. So yeah, there's some concerns, some risks in this bullpen. I had hoped Pagan would get a chance somewhere else in a better pitching environment. And also I was hoping the Reds would kind of upgrade there. And, you know, they had, I think there was, I don't know who else they were talking to, but I felt like, you know, even like a Robert Suarez or Ryan Helsley might have been a better fit for them for the next 2 years. But I guess Pagan, you know, he did it last year. And yeah, they're hoping he can repeat his 2025.
And our last free agent signing from the past couple of weeks, we're only touching on the major league signings, but Ty Adcock somehow got a major league contract with the Padres. It's 1 year. We don't know the dollar amount right now, but Adcock barely pitched last year, just three innings for the Mets. He's been somebody that didn't really have a lot of minor league success either, but he does have some decent stuff. He throws pretty hard. He's got a slider. He's got a cutter that PLV really likes. So maybe the Padres see something there. I just do think it's notable that the Padres would hand out a major league contract to somebody that even the relief pitching podcast is flummoxed by, especially in a bullpen that's just so crowded. Like, why would they go out and say, all right, we'll hand out a major league contract to this guy, considering I'm sure they're going to get some other relievers throughout the off season. But sort of interesting to see Adcock sign a major league contract with the Padres.
Yeah, I think, well, they might add, I don't know what the Padres are looking to do financially. I don't know if they have like the means to kind of add someone significant to their bullpen. So this might be, you know, part of them trying to, you know, kind of nickel and dime. Yeah. Moneyball the rest of that bullpen. Definitely intriguing for someone who hasn't had much success. Still on the right side of 30, throws 97 plus. But yeah, never been a big strikeout guy. But the Padres have had really good success, obviously, with their bullpen, turning relievers into weapons in that bullpen. So I feel like, you know, he's not gonna start the year as a high leverage arm. But could certainly work his way into the mix. You know, we still don't really have, I don't think we have much clarity on, you know, is Mason Miller or Adrian Morahone going to get a chance in the rotation yet? I don't. Right. Yeah. So I don't know, but we'll see what, maybe Adcock gets stretched out. I don't know.
He does have four pitches. Could work out.
So,
okay. Well, next, we'll move forward to talk about some injuries and news from the past week. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham talking relief pitchers. We're going to discuss some injuries and news from the past couple of weeks, starting with Josh Hader, who should be ready for opening day. He suffered a capsule sprain in his left shoulder, which is the arm that he throws with, a couple weeks into August. And for many players, that type of injury requires surgery and a potential year plus absence. But both Hader and the Astros are convinced that the lefty won't need surgery and that he will be ready for opening day. Hader said it should be normal. Obviously, intensity gets up in spring training, and we'll see how that goes and how I'm recovering, bouncing back from that. But as of now, everything is status quo, back to normal. So that's good news on Josh Hader, right?
It's better news than it's better than it could be worse. Yeah. I still don't love like the whole, like, should be, I should be normal.
Well, the Astros too. You can't trust anything that they're saying.
And yeah, I don't know what to do as far as like, I don't like for Hader, like ranking Hader right now. It's tough because I could see him in like, there's like a group of 10 spots where I could see him kind of landing. But yeah, I just, like, you know, hate the not knowing that he's going to be 100% for opening day. It makes me, if you are drafting now, just like make sure Brian Abreu's taken late in drafts, or especially if you're in like 300, if you're in a league that has 300, 400 players taken, I feel like Abreu needs to be rostered at least for now to see how Hader holds up through the spring. Because yeah, it's more positive than not, this news that he should be ready for opening day, but I just feel like, you know, when this injury, again, the Astros, man, when this injury happened, it was like kind of downplayed, and then like, oh, he'll be ready for the playoffs if they make it. And like, it doesn't sound like he would have been ready for the postseason if they were in playing in October. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Astros really, really concern me with how they handle injuries,
or at least how they report them.
Or yeah, it's both, maybe. I don't know. It's just, is the Hader being able to talk and saying this himself is kind of okay. At least we get it from his mouth. But it's still just like, it should be normal. Okay. It doesn't give me a ton of hope, but
right.
Yeah.
Cause we'll, we've heard them sound more confident.
Should be normal. Yeah. Like, it should be
normal. And then have worse things happen. Yeah. I don't know. I'm on your side. Definitely not fully confident in Hader being ready for opening day, considering the Astros' history of reporting on injuries recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we'll touch on some rumors on the free agent market right now. Looks like the Marlins, Blue Jays, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and Tigers, a lot of teams are interested in Pete Fairbanks. It's interesting that the Tigers are interested. It would be a weird fit because their April and even their May schedule are not ideal for someone like Fairbanks, who has dealt with Raynaud's syndrome in the past, which means that cold weather can make his fingers numb. I've seen, like, it's almost like a TikTok trend. You see people with Raynaud's syndrome and their fingers, dude, just turn completely white. It's legit.
Yeah. My wife's cousin has it. It's crazy. Oh. Yeah. She lives in Florida now, so she doesn't have to deal with it, but right. It's like, as much,
you get a little bit cold and it's like, yeah, you can't feel your hand.
Right. And like, I was looking at the Tigers schedule for April, May, and yeah, obviously home games in Detroit. I mean, we've seen it. It was like a couple years ago when, like, yeah, Miguel Cabrera hit a home run,
right,
and was like
in a blizzard
out.
Off yeah. Shane Bieber.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, like, Detroit in April is not ideal. And even like May can be cold too, but like, they have a lot of home games, and even their away games in April. I think they come to Boston, which, like, it's cold here in Boston in April. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's a weird fit, especially considering the other teams. And, you know, the Blue Jays are in there, but they have a dome in Toronto. I don't know what the rest of the, they probably play in Boston or in New York at some point in April, which will be cold, but, you know, for the most part, their home games are home or in a dome. So he's got that. And, like, you know, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Marlins would be fine. So yeah, Detroit's kind of interesting. And I do, I think Detroit's just kind of kicking the tires in every closer, but I feel like at the end of the day, they just end up with Kyle Finnegan returning. But yeah, that's kind of how I see things going there. But it sounds like Pete Fairbanks is, like, going to make a move. He's going to be signed probably within the next week. There's a lot of steam picking up there. So mm-hmm. I feel like that could be the next closer to be signed.
Fairbanks' previous team is suggesting that they will be going back to a closer by committee approach, something they championed a few years back, made it popular around MLB before going back to the traditional closer role. But pitching coach Kyle Snyder said, if you look at some of our most successful years over the last eight, that's essentially what it's been. He's been with the team since 2018. And Snyder said, we're probably as well equipped right now in the bullpen regarding matchups and as talented as we are down there and as versatile as we are down there to kind of return to that form.
He's not wrong. I feel like since Fairbanks has been there, though, it's been his job. I don't know. I would have mm-hmm. to go back and look. I feel like they've always had a closer, especially since 2018. Maybe a couple of years they actually did the committee. But, like, they had Colome, they had Pagan for a year, they had Fairbanks. Kittredge, yeah, had a
little
year.
Bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this now, right, the way their bullpen's constructed now, like this actually does work, and they can this could be an absolutely like everyone's like the Rays offseason so far has been kind of questionable, and I don't kind of understand the route they're going here. But they're still probably going to make the playoffs because this bullpen is going to be so good and people are going to sleep on them again like they always do. But this bullpen, and yeah, now that, you know, Cash is able to just kind of similar to what Detroit, you know, what AJ Hinch was doing in Detroit, but it's just like the weapons in Tampa are so much better than what they have in Detroit. You know, between it sounds like Clevinger, Jax, and Yusetta are going to be the top three, you know, in the bottom, the last three innings of the game, which that's obviously a really good trio. Then you also you add on Baker, and if Mason Montgomery can, you know, break out, and you know, they have other biggies still there if he comes back healthy. Yeah, the Rays are just that bullpen's gonna be super fun, and the reason why they that's gonna make or break their season, how that bullpen performs.
You mentioned Kyle Finnegan, and there appears to be mutual interest in a reunion with the Tigers. It also looks like the Marlins are interested in Finnegan. I'd love to see Finnegan back in Detroit because it's the first time I've actually been intrigued with him, especially from a fantasy standpoint. It would definitely work out if Pete Fairbanks goes somewhere else. Finnegan is almost feels like definitely going to the Tigers. So pretty good shot. We see Finnegan return to the team that helped him break out last year.
Yeah, it's the Marlins have kind of been interested in every reliever, every closer,
which is weird and frustrating.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're willing. I think they run Ronnie Henriquez to be more of a multi-inning weapon or versatile option for them. And, you know, they could obviously upgrade over Fauché. And if they're going to spend some money, that's, you know, kind of a logical, you know, go get an actual closer there. I don't know if it's going to be Finnegan. I still think Detroit makes the most sense for Finnegan for the player, the team. And then, yeah, Detroit can kind of have their, it's definitely not the same as Tampa Bay, but having a Holton, Finnegan, Vest trio is kind of similar in a way to, you know, having those three guys being able to finish games or come in the seventh inning, eighth inning, whatever that may be. Does work. It worked for them last year. Could work for them again next year. So, yeah. But, yeah, Marlins and linked to everyone. I don't know who they're going to wind up with, but why should it be Kenley Jansen? That could be an interesting one.
That would be I wouldn't be mad at that.
He's been linked to no one. I haven't heard his name, and I know, like, he's probably going to wait to see how things play out, but I haven't heard his name at all so far.
Put him on the Dodgers. Put him on the Dodgers.
Could be. I mean, could be.
Sean Armstrong is hoping to return to the Rangers. It would make sense. That bullpen is absolutely wide open, and he could return to being the closer there like he pitched down the stretch for Texas. However, it appears like the team doesn't want to spend any money. However, this would be a good fit. There is plenty of space for Armstrong to put or slot into that bullpen.
I feel like if they're going to go like a cheap route, to fill out the back end of their bullpen, he's at least got to be at the top of the, and I don't know how cheap he's going to cost. But if there's a mutual, if he wants to return, maybe he'll take a little bit of a discount. But yeah, that bullpen needs help, especially, you know, they have Garcia from the left side. They definitely need righties. If right now, if Armstrong signs there, he's the opening day favorite to close. And I really don't see them adding someone more. I don't see them adding anyone, you know, more significant than him this offseason. They haven't been linked to anyone. All reports have been that they don't want to spend much, you know, they don't want to spend a ton of money after they made that Nimmo trade. So yeah, this Armstrong could make sense. And, you know, I don't know what his ADP is now, but I'm sure people aren't really drafting him. But if he returns as the Rangers closer, there's some sneaky upside there later in drafts.
Sean Newcomb and Brad Keller are receiving interest as starting pitchers. Makes sense. Both of them had a lot of success as relievers this past season and were highly regarded pitching prospects that never really panned out. We've seen this in the past where a starter finally figures it out as a reliever and then teams want to try him out again as a starter. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, usually doesn't, but
it doesn't typically.
I feel like that's an okay plan though, because you know, the worst thing that happens is that they go back to the bullpen.
Yeah. Right.
They go back to the bullpen and then you just have a good reliever anyway. So it might be worth at least testing it out. But Sean Newcomb, really incredible second half last year, and Brad Keller, an even better second half and complete season for him. So it'd be interesting to see where these guys end up and what roles they pitch in 2026.
Newcomb, maybe. Both these guys I really wanted to see in as a reliever moving forward.
Biased.
But yeah, well, bias and just because, like, I mean, Brad Keller's been starting games since 2018 and didn't work out.
So
and, like,
boring.
It's and yeah, it's not like he was ever exciting as a starter. Mm-hmm. But now he's kind of exciting as a reliever because he's throwing 97. He's not going to throw 97 as a starter.
No.
And you know, the velo gains that Newcomb got as a reliever, that's not going to stick as a starter if he goes back. And he's really a two pitch guy at you know, when it really comes down to it, he's a fastball curveball guy. So, and in a very slim left-handed relief free agent market, I mean, I feel like Newcomb could do really well for himself. I mean, if he's probably gonna get more money if a team really does want him as a starter, but both those guys, I feel like, should just remain as relievers. It's different. Like Ronaldo Lopez is like the one, is he a success story from going from reliever to starter? Because
he was Jordan good for one year and then his arm fell off.
Yeah. That's that too. I mean, we'll see what Clay Holmes is able to do. But I feel like Clay Holmes is a little bit different because he never really got a chance to start. These guys, Newcomb and Keller, have had plenty of opportunities to start and it just didn't work out. We'll see what happens. But I feel like they're better off as relievers.
The Mariners appear to be planning to add two relievers, according to Adam Jude of the Seattle Times. Looks like left-handers are a priority, and as you mentioned, not many on the free agent market, so they have shown trade interest in guys like Matt Strom, Jojo Romero, and Jose Ferrer. I think Romero is probably the one who's most likely to be traded, considering the Cardinals appear to be in sell mode, but the Mariners could definitely use some support for the lone lefty in that bullpen, Gabe Spire.
Yeah, I think Strom and Romero have been thrown around. But Ferrer was the interesting one. I was like, it'd probably be better for Ferrer. I feel like that would be, you know, him being in a setup middle relief role might be better for him. But I still kind of like him as a very late, you know, sneaky dart throw as a closer if he sticks in Washington. Especially Washington's
he's still
doing
so young. I don't know why they would.
Yeah,
do
he
that.
Is, and yeah, he that would probably take a lot for Seattle to give up to get Ferrer. So I don't think that happens. But yeah, Ferrer still a lot of good things happening in Washington. I hope they keep Ferrer around. So he can build there.
All right. We didn't touch on this last week, but Eric Swanson announced his retirement. He was only 32 years old. So farewell to Eric Swanson. Any final words for the righty?
I just think like the one he was traded for. It was him for Teoscar Hernandez. Like what
one,
was that?
One for Three, one.
Yeah. I mean, they got back some pitching prospect with Swanson, Mako.
Yeah,
but it was basically Swanson for Teoscar Hernandez, and that wasn't that long ago. And now, you know,
2022 offseason.
Yeah, and all of, you know, Swanson's had dealt with a ton of injuries since then, unfortunately. But yeah, he was really like he should be in his, you know, someone you would think would be in his prime right now, and was really a good reliever for the Mariners before heading to Toronto in that trade. So yeah, just interesting person of note because. And I'd say Oscar Hernandez is being talked about as being on the trade market again right now. So, yeah, just someone, yeah, interesting. Only 32.
Right. I was surprised to see it. I didn't know if we'd have much to talk about considering he hasn't really done much recently.
I always think
but
of that trade, though. Like, when was the last time like a middle reliever was traded for like a starting corner outfielder?
That
like,
might be the last time.
Yeah,
How it panned out or didn't.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, now it's time to move into our main topic. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jay Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We're going to talk about the relievers who were unlucky and the other relievers who were lucky last year. So we're going to look at some underlying metrics, compare that to ERA, and note the guys who were unlucky or lucky last year and are likely to have different fortunes next year. So these are either guys to avoid or target or change your opinions on for the next season. I know Effectively Wild, which is one of my favorite podcasts, was talking a lot about FIP and ERA. And I think most people in this industry are very familiar with how closely those are tied with next season's performance. ERA is not very predictive, but numbers like FIP and XFIP and Sierra are very predictive. And the amount of pitchers that pitch closer to their underlying metrics, their ERA estimators the following year is very high. There's a lot of correlation there. Sierra, I think, is the most predictive, with XFIP being right behind it. XFIP, I prefer only because I understand it more. It's really simple. But they all seem to agree regularly.
Yeah, I think Sierra has been a little bit more sticky, or it's been better with relievers.
So slightly. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know overall, but I know for relievers, Sierra's been a little bit better.
Do you know the difference between the two? I'd have to look it up. It's okay if you don't.
I would have to. I have known it in the past, and I'd have to look it up again.
But okay, problem.
Yeah, also XERA has been one that's been kind of thrown around a lot, and that's related to that, has correlation to ballpark factors as well. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more predictive than basic ERA, and that one incorporates Statcast metrics.
Yeah, if you're if you don't want to go into an XFIP or a Sierra, at least just take the XERA, that's a little bit better. And it's definitely, because ERA is definitely not something you want to look at year to year. And if you want to take my word for it, I think it was Eno tweeted something about look at the guys with the ERAs in the mid fours, how much money they're getting paid. The MLB teams are paying Devin Williams and Dylan Cease all this money. Mm-hmm. It's because ERA isn't important for them looking forward, So,
yeah. I think you can pretty safely say that teams do not care about a pitcher's previous season ERA. But even more safe than numbers like XFIP or just ERA estimators in general are projections. I mean, projections are going to account for all of that stuff and not just base it on the previous season. You're not just going to get, was this guy's XFIP last year? That's what I expect him to do the next year, because you have to account for all kinds of things. He's not going to pitch exactly how he did the previous year. But if you take in to account previous seasons and aging curves and all that kind of stuff, that's what projections use. That's why projections are used so widely in this industry, especially when people are doing their rankings. That's pretty much all I do, is I use the auction calculator and help me put my rankings together that way. But projections are huge. Definitely sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to get access to pitcher lists projections. Kyle does a lot of work on that, and they are very predictive. They are up there with being the most predictive in the industry. But right now on Fangraphs, we only have Steamer and Fangraphs depth charts. I trust Steamer, but they generally are going to agree at this point, because the only difference between those two at this point is the playing time.
Yeah, that's not going to... Yeah, those are pretty much the same right Steamer. Now.
And so for the first guy we'll talk about, we'll talk about unlucky relievers, but somebody like Devin Williams, who had a 4.79 ERA last season, he had very wildly underperforming. He very wildly underperformed. His ERA estimators were much lower than his ERA: 2.95 XFIP, 2.67 Sierra, 3.11 XERA. But you can see in his Steamer projected ERA of 3.14 that, they're going to encapsulate all that in that number. So somebody like Devin Williams, who really struggled with the home run to fly ball ratio last year, is expected to have a huge step back in the right direction in 2026. And so Mets fans can hang their hat on that.
Yeah. I mean, going from Yankee Stadium to Citi Field is a big upgrade for him. I'm sure defensively too, behind him is going to be a lot better. I don't know who's going to be at second base there, but they got Semien. Yeah.
Anybody other than Volpe is.
Yeah.
They got Lindor and Semien up the middle. That's fire.
That's a lot better than what the Yankees had last year.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he had, I mean, his left on base rate last year was 55.2%, which is like very, I mean, that's a crazy low mark. His career number is 75.8. His BABIP wasn't crazy, but even at his 0.299 BABIP was the highest he had since 2021. But yeah, everything else, like the K rate was down a little bit, but I mean, 34.7% is still really good. But his walk rate also came down with it. So like, as far as like strikeout minus walk goes, very similar to his normal numbers. Yeah, I just think that that luck turns around for him. I mean, I was like trying to figure out what, like, if there's anything like, you know, pitch change, pitch usage, just like sequencing that could work. I don't even know. I think he's gonna, I think he'll be fine. He'll bounce back. I think last year is just a fluke as far as his ERA goes.
I agree.
And yeah, I'm like, don't have anything to worry about. And then I thought about also, he was dealing with that really bad back injury this last year in Milwaukee. And I hope that's not something that can come back, but it's, yeah, I feel like as long as he's healthy, he's locked in as a top 5-6 closer, assuming Edwin Diaz is signed.
Agreed. Yeah. You mentioned that 55% left on base rate. That was in the third percentile in MLB. And Nick talks a lot about what he's dubbed the Holy Trinity of equating luck. And that's BABIP, home run to fly ball rate, and left on base rate. And you can really find unlucky and lucky relievers by just looking at those numbers where pitchers land on that, because generally those are going to come back to the league average. It really depends some on how some pitchers pitch. Guys who are ground ball pitchers are going to have higher BABIPs in general. Yeah. But having a left on base rate, 55%, is crazy considering this was a guy who in the previous season, I mean, it was only 21 innings, but he had a 93% left on base rate. So, and as you mentioned, 76% for his career. So yeah. Devin Williams is definitely going to have a step forward, but on top of looking at ERA estimators, you should be looking at these numbers as well. They definitely incorporate these numbers, but you can more clearly see exactly where that player was unlucky. Yeah.
Exactly. The number.
Why Williams was so unlucky last year, and it was just every guy that got on base came around to score. More than almost 50% of the batters that reached base against him came around to score. So that's pretty unfortunate. Next, another guy who has had a lot of success in his career but struggled last year. Griffin Jacks had a 4.36 ERA, but came with a 2.17 xFIP, a 2.30 Sierra, and a 3.26 xERA. Varying numbers there, but all of them suggest that Jacks was very unlucky last year.
Yeah, and you know, with Williams, it was the left on base issue. For Jacks, it seems like his was the BABIP was 3.368 BABIP last year. His career number is 2.86, so up 100 points. And yeah, there was obviously, he was struggling in Minnesota too, but then when he got to Tampa Bay, he continued to struggle, as did a lot of pitchers there in that ballpark, which, you know, they don't have to deal with again this year. But yeah, and we talked about Tampa Bay earlier, and he might not be, and honestly, not naming anyone the closer there has me more excited for getting Griffin Jacks probably really late in drafts. And I feel like he could be a difference maker. I mean, Jacks was a guy the last 2 years who, even we knew he wasn't closing, but was still a guy you kind of had a, you know, people drafted him in the late 200s, early 300s of drafts, just because how dominant he was, ratio wise, strikeout wise.
A setup man.
As a setup, yeah, he would, you know, factor in a couple saves here and there, but you weren't drafting him to be a closer. You were drafting him for everything else. And like, if he can do that again, plus get you 15-ish or more saves, and you're drafting him in like that same late 200 spot, like that's huge. That's a difference maker. So, and same with, you know, guys like that whole bullpen, like Edwin Nieseta, getting him late too, like, sure, definitely worth a shot as well. But yeah, Jacks is one who, him and Devin Williams are the two guys on this list, this like unlucky list, that are like, I'm pretty confident that they're going to, you know, bounce back in a big way next year. And both should be values in drafts.
Right. PLV loves Griffin Jacks. Third percentile BABIP last year is definitely going to flip around the other way. Next, we've got Jordan Romano, who was maybe the most unlucky pitcher in baseball this past year. 8.23 ERA, but that came with a 4.33 xFIP, a 3.66 Sierra, and a 3.99 xERA. Most notably, just every single fly ball he allowed seemed to leave the ballpark. 25% home run to fly ball ratio. But even worse than that, he had the worst left on base rate in baseball. 0th percentile, 49% left on base rate. So he was just unable to keep the guys who made it on base from scoring. And a lot of that had to do with just every fly ball leaving the ballpark against him.
Yeah, I mean, totally unlucky. 49% left on base rate. You thought Devin Williams 55 was worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were, he went through stretches last year where he was really good and then he was really bad. It was mostly bad, but there was a stretch where he was really good. I don't know. His steamer projection is okay. I still think he could be better than that. I don't know. It depends on where he is health wise. It's been, you know, a couple rough years, the last two seasons for him health wise. But he's a guy, like, if you're, there's a lot of, you know, the bad teams out there that don't really have a closer, like, definitely a guy I would be taking a shot on, you know, hope that he has a really good first half and you can trade him if you need to. But, like, just, I don't think there's been any talk about his market. He's going to be probably someone who signs in January, February, 1 year deal, but there's definitely some, I think there's some hope left here for Romano. I think give him one more season, see if he can right the ship before we totally write him off.
Right. Next, we've got Kevin Ginkle, who had a shot at being the Diamondbacks closer, but not only did he deal with injuries, he also dealt with ineffectiveness, which can be blamed on poor luck. Ginkle had a 7.36 ERA, but that came with a 4.49 xFIP, a 3.94 Sierra, and a 4.52 xERA. As you mentioned, on Romano, Steamer suggests that Ginkle is going to be much better this next year, projecting him for a 3.81 ERA, which, if he pitches like that, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the closer for the whole year, given the lack of options there.
Yeah, as things, and we did see that the Diamondbacks are interested in Pete Fairbanks. I think that's the first reliever they've been linked to, if I'm not mistaken. But outside of that, there hasn't been too much talk about the Diamondbacks, you know, what their plan is with their bullpen, because they obviously don't have a closer right now. But yeah, I mean, as things stand today, I think Ginkle should get the first crack just based on his, you know, history as being a closer for a little bit there. 16 saves with them. And yeah, they just really don't have anyone else at this point. And there's some hope, there's some upside with Ginkle. Obviously, that last year was super unlucky, but I think, you know, the 3 years prior to that were really great for him. So I feel like you can get back to that form as long as he's healthy.
Right. He was also somebody who really struggled in BABIP and left on base rate. 7th percentile BABIP, 2nd percentile left on base rate. So we should see a better season for Kevin Ginkle in 2026. Whether or not he's the closer is still up in the air, but he is the person on that club that has the most experience in that role, and it's going to be healthy to start the season. Next, we've got Grant Taylor, who displayed some really great stuff in his rookie campaign for the White Sox, and a 4.67 ERA is not terrible, but his underlying metrics suggest that Taylor can be one of the best relievers in baseball next year if he doesn't get shifted to the rotation. 2.29 xFIP, 2.61 Sierra, 2.61 xERA. The guy throws really hard. He's got some great stuff. And while the Steamer projection is 3.37, I think the underlying metrics suggest he can take it even a step further. I mean, he had a first percentile BABIP last year, was over 400, 430.
Yeah.
But he somehow didn't give up a home run.
It's tough to project him too because of you know, the starter he started, yeah, like our projections don't know his role. I know that was a factor. Looking at some of our PLV projections, early ones. But even so, like, they talk about him being this multi-inning reliever, and I don't, that's fine. I still think if you're in leagues, I mean, probably not someone you're drafted in like the top 300, but like if you're in a league that has, you know, 400 players, you're a 16 teamer, if he's available in that 400 range, like I would definitely take a flyer on him. It might not be a ton of saves there. He had 6 saves last year. But you know, maybe he's like a 10 save, 5 win, you know, pretty good ratios and a really good strikeout numbers guy for you, which, you know, that there's still some value in that, especially that late in drafts.
Yeah.
Kind of like Ronnie Henriquez in a way. Yeah. Morjon. Just, you know, the multi-inning reliever can be valuable as long as they're really good, and Grant Taylor can be that. I think, you know, the role might, you know, him not being named the closer and not being a starter could, you know, make his ADP drop a little bit, or, you know, he might not be drafted at all right now, but there's a ton of upside there. Just someone with really good stuff. And yeah, 420 BABIP last year, like that's not gonna, that's 420 unreal. BABIP for a guy with a ground ball rate under 50%, that's interesting. Yeah,
no, so, home runs, no,
yeah,
home runs allowed.
No, it's home impressive. Runs either. I mean, yeah, it's, yeah, just worth the dart throw in the 400s for sure.
For sure. From the south side of Chicago to the north side of Chicago, we have a pair of unlucky relievers, Porter Hodge and Ben Brown. Both struggled last year. 6.27 ERA for Hodge, but it came with a 4.03 xFIP, a 3.80 Sierra, and a 4.24 xERA, while Brown had a better 4.99 ERA, but his underlying metrics were far superior to even Hodge's, 2.86 xFIP, 3.39 Sierra, and a 2.76 expected ERA from StatCast. Both of these guys have really great stuff. I think the role will maybe help them, their potential role in 2026. Brown has been sort of tossed between the rotation and the bullpen, and I think that has sort of stunted his growth as a reliever. He's a two-pitch guy. He needs to be in the bullpen, where Hodge dealt with injuries at the beginning of last season and then, you know, was in and out of the minors and the majors. So I think some more stability for these guys next year will allow them to pitch closer to their ERA estimators from the previous season.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be counted on unless they add one or two more arms. I mean, those two guys are going to be counted on this year as relievers. Hopefully Brown sticks as a reliever. I really think he can be, I mean, Palencia is probably a safer bet to close, but I feel like Brown, if he really locks in as a reliever, I feel like he could be a potential closer long-term. It's just, yeah, the two pitch, you know, repertoire he has is just, it's not going to work as a starter, but as a reliever, he's shown promise. And yeah, I still think Hodge can bounce back as well. Again, we even talked about him last year. He's not really a closer. He's not an ideal closer, but it can be a really good setup guy, I think, for them down the road. So yeah, I mean, they only have Palencia and Maton right now. The rest of that bullpen with no Keller, no Kittredge. They lost Teelbar, Pomeranz. I mean, the whole bullpen's kind of going to be different this year. So openings for Hodge and Brown. And if you had to take a chance on one of them, and I don't know, that maybe a dynasty league or a really deep league, I would still prefer Brown. I do think that there is a really good reliever skill set there from Ben Brown.
All right. We talked about Griffin Jacks in the Rays bullpen, but there's another unlucky reliever that has an equally high ceiling, and that's Mason Montgomery, who I had previously dubbed the left-handed Mason Miller. Montgomery in his rookie season had a 5.67 ERA, but that came with a 3.56 xFIP, a 3.55 Sierra, and a 4.58 xERA. He was very unlucky in the BABIP department, second percentile, 391 BABIP. He also gave up more home runs than he should have and did not strand a lot of base runners, but this is a guy with a great fastball from the left side and a really good slider, and I expect him to take a big step forward next year and maybe be 2026, the breakout pitcher of 2026.
That's what I'm hoping. I was a year early. I'm not giving up on him. The stuff is just too electric, and now pitching back at, inside at the trough, I feel like will help. the home run luck or, you know, bad luck last year, that should turn around. His stuff's too good. He needs to command his fastball better, and his secondary isn't great, but the fastball can be so good. I'm excited to see him this year. Hopefully stay healthy and stay in that Rays bullpen. Cause yeah, we talked about the three guys that are going to be at the top of that bullpen for now, but Montgomery by the end of the year could work his way into that mix as well.
Jordan Hicks was one of the headlines of the Rafael Devers trade to San Francisco. And he really struggled once he got to Boston, but a lot of that can be attributed to poor luck. The guy finished the season with a 7.77 ERA, but that came with underlying metrics that don't seem nice, but compared to that ERA, they are very nice. And Hicks's incredible stuff, including a 100-mile-per-hour sinker, suggests that 2026 should be better. 5.65 xFIP, 5.33 CERA, 5.99 xERA.
His his steamer would be like a career year for him.
Nice.
Which isn't even that great, but like, yeah, I just want to believe in the velocity, and like, this dude throws 100. Can he turn it around? I think the Red Sox are going to give him a shot. He's going to be totally written off, and I understand it, but like, there's a non-zero chance that he kind of has a breakout, or at least can get back to where he was in like 2023, maybe, as a full-time reliever. No more, you know, back and forth between starting, relieving. Like the last time he was a full-time reliever was 2023, had a ton of success. So yeah, let's hope he can get back to that.
And lastly, Ryan Fernandez struggled last year, but he's always been somebody that's interested me because of his pretty decent fastball. He had a 7.71 ERA last year that came with a 4.51 xFIP, a 4 Sierra, and a 4.05 xERA. That's Ryan Fernandez.
Yeah, I mean, still not like great numbers, and you know, the projections are very, you know, middling on him, but that's, you know, this Cardinals bullpen is kind of all meh. And, you know, Fernandez, we were talking last season going into the year, like he was supposed to be the top setup guy in front of Ryan Helsley. So, you know, last year was bad luck. There was a lot of bad luck he dealt with. Helsley's not there anymore. You know, the bullpen's wide open. So maybe Fernandez can work his way back into a, you know, high leverage role. Maybe a closer role at some point. I don't know. I don't love it, but again, this bullpen is very wide open. So someone not to forget about in that Cardinals bullpen.
All right. So those are our unlucky relievers to recap. Devin Williams, Griffin Jacks, Jordan Romano, Kevin Ginkle, Grant Taylor, Porter Hodge, Ben Brown, Mason Montgomery, Jordan Hicks, and Ryan Fernandez. Obviously that doesn't account for all of the pitchers that were unlucky last year, but I hope we've given you the tools to identify those guys when you are doing your deep dives later in the offseason or doing your rankings or whatever, looking at relievers. You look at the holy trinity of equating luck and look at some projections and those ERA estimators to find some guys that should have better luck in 2026. Some guys that will likely have worse luck in 2026, guys who overperformed their ERA estimators, are up next. We'll start with the greatest perpetrator of them all, and that's Carlos Estevez, who's been doing it for quite some time, not just this past season, but in 2025, Estevez had over 40 saves. He also had a 2.45 ERA, but that came with a 4.95 xFIP, a 4.43 Sierra, and a 3.69 expected ERA.
Yeah, you know, and that expected ERA is a little bit lower given the, you know, the situation in Kansas City, in that ballpark. And I do think that there's, you know, that's a great situation for anyone, for especially for him. I feel like there's a chance he can put together one more lucky season. I don't want to take the chance personally on it, but it's doable. I mean, I think there's definitely regression, but what if it's just like, what if he ends up being like a low three ERA guy with 30 something saves again? Like,
it's like the role is going to make him fantasy relevant no matter what. And if he's not terrible, then he could keep pitching. But those ERA estimators suggest that,
it's scary.
Like you said, the xERA suggests he could be serviceable, but if he starts going over four, near five, it starts to get a little scary. Or if he doesn't just return to normal luck, but he returns to unlucky, then then you start then you start seeing
that he's out of his job in April.
Exactly. Not even pitching.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that can go, and I just don't want to take. I don't want to be a part of it. Let someone else in your league, and like you shouldn't be upset if he does have another good season and you didn't draft him. Just like there are other guys, there's other ways to build your bullpen and be lucky. I don't know what Estevez's ADP is right now, but it's got to be higher than it should be, I would imagine, just because of those. When you see 40 saves, that obviously that boosts guys' ADP way higher than it should go.
And if people were, not convinced by the 2.45 ERA in 2024. Too, he just repeated it again last year. So, I don't know why you would start questioning him now.
He's Alex Colomé put together like a 2.5 year stretch of like just bamboozling people and like being super lucky.
And then imploded.
And then the wheels fell off eventually. And that could be what's happening with Estevez, but who knows? It's a good situation, good defense behind him. Good.
Right.
Yeah. It's someone who like, you're in like, especially if you're in like a dynasty or a keeper league and you have him, it's like those guys, it's like, you don't really like love that he's on your team, but you're probably not going to be able to trade him. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can find someone in your league who likes him better than you, but it's like, you just stick with it and see, just like, what's the Vargas rule? It kind of like, Nick says, starters, just see how long it lasts. Maybe he's got, there could still be some luck there for Estevez.
Right. I feel like it's a similar situation to Kenley Jansen, who is likely to have that role that makes him fantasy relevant. And even if he does take a step back from last season, he should still be somebody that you want to roster in fantasy. But there is a lot of risk there. Jansen had a 2.59 ERA last year, one of his best seasons in since 2020, since leaving the Dodgers, basically. But that came with a 4.60 xFIP, a 3.94 Sierra, and a 3.75 x ERA. He's still relying on that cutter, but last year he relied on very fortunate BABIP luck, sub 200 BABIP at 196. That was in the 99th percentile. He also was great at stranding runners. Obviously, a lot of that can be attributed to his ability to pitch the ninth inning. He just has so much success there. He sort of knows what he's doing, but to allow balls in play is to be a pitcher, and to get away with very few of those turning into hits is very lucky for Jansen.
He needs to be in another situation, in a good pitcher's ballpark, especially with his that BABIP's low because he's a fly ball pitcher, doesn't get like any ground balls. So you get a big deep outfield for him, with a good outfield defense, he should be fine. That does kind of limit his landing spots. Like he can't go to Sacramento because that's gonna be a disaster.
Homer Derby.
Yeah. There should be a team. That's why. I wonder. Like Miami could be kind of interesting. If they really want just like a closer guy, like a guy with closer experience. I think for him, landing spot makes a huge difference this year. He's going to want to close. We know that. He's waiting to see how the market, works itself out, because there's still, at least five or six closers maybe out there. So he'll probably wait and see. The landing spot makes a difference if I'm going to be even remotely interested in him or not.
Right. Somebody with closer experience is Dennis Santana, who took over the closer role in Pittsburgh after they traded David Bednar to the Yankees. Santana had a great season for the Pirates, but it's unclear whether or not he'll be able to carry that over into 2026. 2.18 ERA for Santana, but that came with a 4.17 xFIP, a 3.68 Sierra, and a 3.55 x ERA. Santana is likely to hold on to the closer role to open the season for the Pirates. I wouldn't expect them to splurge on a closer this offseason, but he's not somebody that I would be confident in pitching at the level that he did last year, nor do I expect him to even be on this team after the trade deadline.
Pittsburgh is kind of floating the idea of spending money and being competitive, as they should be. I mean, they have Paul Skeens in his prime, like they might want to do something about that. But at the same time, they haven't really had any, there's been no mentions about them adding to their bullpen. So Santana should be safe as the closer for now. But, and also as things currently stand, I don't expect him to be really in contention at the deadline. So he could be traded in in July, which who knows where he ends up and how, and, you know, if he's even a closer where he goes. But yeah, the ballpark there is definitely, you know, that's, he's had some success. Team context has led to him being a little bit more successful than he probably should have been last year. The strikeout stuff did kind of come down from where it was during his breakout in the second half of 2024. Yeah,
he was really interesting last year.
Yeah, 24. Going into the year. So yeah, that's another interesting name to, I feel like he does get dealt at some point. But yeah, maybe he can hold on to, you know, having relevance in the first half of the year, and he shouldn't be too costly in drafts at this point. So not someone I'm totally avoiding, but I'm probably not going to get and many, if any, shares of him, just because there is significant risk there for Santana.
Yeah. We talked about Kevin Ginkle, but after Ginkle hit the IL for the rest of the season in Arizona, Andrew Salfrank got the bulk of the saves down the stretch. He's a lefty who hasn't really done much in his career, but he did raise some eyebrows last year with a 1.24 ERA, but that seems very unsustainable, not only because he had a sub 17% strikeout rate, but also because all of his hotel was in the 90th percentile across the board. He had a 4.61 xFIP, 4.54 Sierra, and a 3.87 xERA. Even Roster Resource seems to be disillusioned, or no, the opposite. The opposite.
Illusioned.
Sure. they're convinced by Salfrank's 2025 campaign. They have him as the closer on their depth chart, but I am not convinced by that at all.
That would be, yeah. I mean, 8% K minus walk rate for him last year. Yeah, obviously super lucky all around the board. He's a fine lefty, a solid, you know, I don't even know if he's a setup quality lefty.
He throws sub 90.
Yeah, he's not a hard throwing lefty. He would have been, he's more of a throwback, like lefty, like loogie type. But yeah, I mean, the Roster Resource has him as the closer, I think, just because of how he ended the year kind of in the role by having three saves. But also the ERA looks the best. And yeah, I guess there's no one else really there that's, I mean, outside of, I think Ginkle, just because of the, or even Ryan Thompson would make more sense.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't.
They don't even have any other lefties. I mean, they have Brandon Garcia, who they got via trade last year. But like, you know, you sort of want two guys who aren't the closer at least.
Yeah. I just can't see. I can't see him being. I don't know. I don't know if he's getting drafted, and I don't think he should be drafted. But maybe he's because he is kind of considered the closer by some people, that he might be getting drafted right now. But I don't see that happening. Even if they don't sign someone outside of the organization, I feel like, you know, either the veteran righties and Thompson and Ginkle get the job, or what could even be more fun is if, you know, like a Jameson or Morillo, one of those hard throwing younger righties could work their way into the job. So
that'd be cool.
It would be better than Andrew Salfrank. Let's put it that way.
For sure.
I just can't see that. I can't see him sticking his closer there.
For sure. The Cardinals had a dual-headed monster, put quotes around the monster, in the closer role in the second half last year after they dealt Ryan Helsley, Jojo Romero, and Riley O'Brien combined to get the bulk of the save opportunities for St. Louis down the stretch. And both of them were great last year. 2.07 ERA for Romero, 2.06 for Riley O'Brien, but both of them overperformed. They were very lucky. Romero had a 4.12 xFIP, 4.10 Sierra, and a 3.40 xERA, while O'Brien had a 3.88 xFIP, 3.82 Sierra, and a 3.57 xERA. Both of these guys will be back with the Cardinals next year. The question does remain whether or not they get traded, but I think one question that we can answer pretty easily is whether or not they'll be able to repeat this performance, and I think it'll be pretty easy to say no, especially somebody like both of these guys. They're sinker pitchers. They're guys who are reliant on ground balls. They're going to have higher BABIPs than they did this past season.
Yeah, and kind of this whole list too. It's a lot of these guys, and this Cardinals team especially, they have, you know, a pretty solid ballpark, good situation in that NL Central. And then you have Mason Wynn behind you at shortstop, who's like one of the better defenders there. And I don't know who's going to be playing second base for the next season, but if it's Brandon Donovan, if he stays, he's solid back there too. So they have a solid infield defense. Yeah, if Arenado stays, I mean, the infield defense could be really good there. So that helps, especially that helps like a Riley O'Brien, who gets, you know, a sinker ball or gets a ton of ground balls.
Mm-hmm.
Romero, I mean, you see why Romero is on the trade block and why they are look. I don't know if they're looking to trade him or if there's just interest, but they should be looking to trade him. Might as well just do it now, honestly. You know, lefties, not a lot of lefties out there. I feel like you get a better than you thought return for Jojo Romero. So maybe that does leave like just Riley O'Brien. And then, you know, the guys like Ryan Fernandez and Matt Swanson. I still kind of feel like the Cardinals should add like one veteran reliever, maybe even if it's like a guy just to take a chance on, like a Jordan Romano or something, just someone just to take a chance on a 1 year, you know, low money deal, just to kind of give them a veteran in this bullpen.
Or give them another trade chip.
And a potential trade chip at the deadline as well, yeah. Because let's be honest, Heim Bloom's looking, he's not looking to win this year. It's more of a, you know, it's a couple years down the road situation for them. So, yeah, I feel like, I don't know, yeah. I don't think either one, Romero or Brian, should be the closer there. I still like Swanson the best. I don't know if that's going to actually happen or not. We'll see. I mean, in March, I think there's, you know, going to be a lot of question marks in this bullpen by that time. So, yeah, I think O'Brien's a fun reliever, just not a closer. He's another one of those guys. Sinker slider throws really hard too. That hard sinker, just not a big strikeout guy, and that doesn't excite me from a closer standpoint. Especially when there is some loud contact there. It's not all just soft contact with the sinker,
right?
Yeah.
Joel Piguero is a guy who throws hard as well, and he had a lot of success last year in his rookie campaign, but he was a 28-year-old rookie, which begs the question, why didn't he debut earlier if he's this good? And I think the answer to that is maybe he's not this good. He does throw 100 miles per hour, but it's not great shape on that fastball. PLV does not like it. And he was really lucky last year too, 224 BABIP, which meant that he had a 4.28 xFIP, a 4.13 Sierra, and a 3.31 xERA. So while Piguero does seem to have a lot of good velocity, his slider's not bad, and there's a lot of opportunity in this Giants bullpen, this is a guy who maybe starts to lose the zone a little bit and didn't have a lot of strikeouts this past season and maybe allows a little bit too much contact, and that could come back to bite him as luck shifts the other way for Piguero.
Yeah, that steamer projection for him is not looking too great. I think there's some smoke here because they're that bullpen again is it's Ryan Walker's returning, and then it's a bunch of question marks, and Walker didn't look good as the closer. So it's like, oh, we got Piguero, who had a 2.42 ERA and throws 100 consistently. Why isn't he the closer? But I think we should kind of pump the brakes on Piguero for now. There's been plenty of relievers who throw 100 and don't work out. And I'm not saying Piguero is not going to work out, but I just think we need a little bit more of a sample from him in at the MLB level. Ideally he opens the season in a middle relief role and then can work his way up. 22 innings at the major league level. That's it, 28 years old. So, and fun arm to, you know, anyone who throws 100 is a fun guy to root for and watch, but I think we need to pump the brakes on him being a potential closer there. The Giants need to add some veterans in that bullpen, someone with closer experience. So yeah, maybe it's Kenley Jansen. That could be the fit for Kenley Jansen. No, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Buster Posey like confounds me. I have like no clue what his plan is, but
that's the thing they're saying.
Makes like, moves.
I know that they're like saying they don't want to spend like on a high end pitcher. So it makes me think like, they're out.
Imai wants to take down the Dodgers.
I know you got
Imai wants to take down the Dodgers. You got to get that guy. You got to get that guy. I was really rooting for that. And then he shot that down. He's not going to play in the high end pitching market. And that sort of sucks, but you know, maybe he tricks us. Maybe he does. Maybe he pulls something off.
I think
he could.
Yeah, yeah. I think if he gets his way, I think he would want to add someone like Imai or.
Of course. He probably wants all the best pitchers, yeah. But he's, you know, his hands are tied.
Yeah. I do think like maybe Robert Suarez can fit into the, like, he doesn't cost too much, but I don't know. They need to add some sort of closer there, because going in with Paguero and Walker is, that's the, for a first year head coach who has no MLB experience. I mean, that's kind of, you're asking him to just run that bullpen.
Right.
I mean, that's a tough ask.
Yeah. I don't know much about college baseball, but I assume there's not like a ton of bullpen management. Of course you have to use a bullpen.
It's different.
Because not, it's very different. I would assume you're not like, okay, we got a closer committee, et cetera. Like who this guy, we got to match it. It's probably much different.
Yeah. Some teams, I think with Tennessee, they had Ben Joyce for a little bit, but I think Vitello should have been there. But it's, you know, you don't, not every team, it's not always having a set closer. It's more of a matchup based thing, and they might go matchup based, but they don't even have like the guys really at this point to do that. They need to still add. And I think having one closer still, or want someone with some experience there outside of Ryan Walker, would definitely be beneficial for them.
All right, three more. The first one, Isaac Mattson pitched for the Pirates last year, and he was pretty interesting, especially when there were times where Dennis Santana was, pretty sure he was injured. So we were looking at who might be able to close for the Pirates. Mattson was sort of on that list. I remember why we were talking about him is because it was the trade deadline, and we were like, okay, if Santana and Bednar both get traded, who's the closer? Mattson was having a good season, but I don't think he's likely to repeat the 2.45 ERA he had this last season, mostly because he had a 4.93 xFIP, a 4.27 Sierra, and a 3.29 x ERA. So pretty good at inducing soft contact, but outside of that, Mattson wasn't a guy who jumped off the page in terms of his underlying metrics.
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about Santana, so like that's a bullpen, I guess, if you're speculating in deeper leagues. It's a guy that you've mentioned is like Justin Lawrence.
Yes, I was going to say, guess who I'm in on that bullpen.
I mean, that could be the next guy if you look at like how their bullpen set up. I know Carmen Mudzinski, I like Mudzinski a lot too. I think that's it's either him or Lawrence. But yeah, I mean, if the Pirates were to continue to just always be rebuilding, they could, you know, you move on from Santana and then you go to Lawrence. And then after a year, you can trade Lawrence or something at the deadline. Then you go to Mudzinski and trade him. You know, they kind of have this set up so they can just always have a closer to trade at the deadline if they wanted to. But I think Lawrence and Mudzinski are way better guys. If you're in a holds league and you're looking at like, oh, Mattson's the guy right behind Santana, I should get him in a holds league. If you're going anywhere here, it should be Lawrence or Mudzinski. I know Mattson might start off in that eighth inning role, but the upside points to the other two guys there, and even Kyle Nicholas, I'd prefer, and he hasn't done much at the MLB level, but there's some intrigue there with his stuff. So
Well, good thing you do holds rankings too. So if anybody's curious about who they should be getting in the Pirates bullpen, that's where they should be going to pick guys who are going to get holds in Pittsburgh. Our second to last guy, Anthony Bender, had a great season for the Marlins. It did end early because of injury, but that did help him maintain his 2.16 ERA on the season. He didn't face poor luck at the end of the season there, but it looks like it will probably not continue or carry over into 2026. 4.47 xFIP, 4.22 Sierra, 3.56 x ERA for Anthony Bender.
Yeah, and we talked about the Marlins looking to add to their bullpen, so they add one or two guys that could kind of push Bender down, you know, push him out of that
low leverage guy
situation. Yeah, because you're going to have Fauché and Ronnie Henriquez at least, plus whoever they add. And I still think, there's room for Bender. That was his first full season back from, you know, some serious injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still, I'm not totally out on him. I feel like there's still intriguing stuff there with Bender's sinker slider combo. But first, you know, maybe they see the name and, you know, they're kind of more, because he was really good in 22, 23, I think it was. You know, you might be more intrigued
21.
in yeah, 21, you might be more intrigued with Bender and Holds leagues, but I'm not. That's someone I want to really target at this point. Kind of want to wait and see how that bullpen looks when April hits, because
right.
Yeah, I feel like Ronnie Henriquez is going to have a really big role no matter what, you know, happens there. And I don't think they're going to go away from Fauché anytime soon either. So it's, you know, those two plus a third they bring in could move Bender out. And then they're going to have if Andrew Nardi comes back as their top lefty, that's, you know, another factor as well.
Sneaky bullpen over there.
They had the right. I kind of like Fairbanks there. That fits. I don't know, the vibe.
Doesn't have to move.
Yeah, it doesn't have to go too far. Yeah, it's a good situation for him and the team, I think.
All right. Lastly, we've got Tony Santion, who was primed to be the closer in Cincinnati before Emilio Pagan re-signed with the club, but he will be the top setup man to Pagan like he was last year, but it's unclear if he's going to be able to carry over the 2.44 ERA he had this past season. He broke out in 2024, and it really looked like he was going to have a full season breakout this past year, struggled early on, but locked in the second half. However, the ERA is a bit misleading despite him sort of giving us a little bit more confidence in his abilities by the end of the season. Like I said, 2.44 ERA, but a 4.05 xFIP, a 3.72 Sierra, and a 4.34 xERA for Santion.
Yeah, Steamer's not doesn't really love him as well next year. I feel like just in that bullpen, and you know, his velo never really recovered. There were times in the second half where it's like, the velo's kind of coming back, and then it would dip back down to like 96, mm-hmm. Where he was like mid-90s or mid-97s, you know, in 2024 during his breakout in the second half. Just kind of what we talked about before with him and Pagan, I could see both Pagan and Santillan being replaced by other guys in that bullpen by the end of the year. You know, Connor Phillips really looked awesome the second half as a reliever. Zach Maxwell, obviously that big dude is going to be throwing gas for them. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be able to locate it? If he can, then he's going to be a factor in high leverage spots. And as well as I think Graham Ashcraft's got more to prove as a reliever. I think in a full-time reliever role at being healthy next year, I feel like he could really break out for them. So, could be a good bullpen. There could be a lot of changes, a lot of, you know, moves around that bullpen as far as roles go. So I feel like outside of Pagan's going to be the closer entering the year, but outside of that, they should kind of be open to what roles guys are going to have by the start of the season.
All right. Well, that's all of our lucky relievers to recap. We talked about Carlos Estevez, Kenley Jansen, Dennis Santana, Andrew Salfranc, Jojo Romero, Riley O'Brien, Joel Peguero, Isaac Mattson, Anthony Bender, and Tony Santion. Once again, disclaimer, that's not all of the lucky relievers from this past season, but you should have the tools now to be able to identify them yourself. And with that, that will put an end to this episode of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and anything else you're working on this offseason?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Still working on the reliever ranks for the draft kit, which should be out hopefully by the time the football season ends. I don't have a perfect date on that, but yeah, there's, you know, trying to go through 100, 200 relievers, do some profiles on them. And then, yeah, that should be fun. And hopefully, I don't know, still in the early stages, but there could be some interesting changes to like how rankings, reliever rankings and save plus holds lists and all those lists go next year. So kind of a teaser, but I feel like we got some really good stuff kind of in the pipeline that could really be a game changer for all your reliever needs out there.
All right. I'm intrigued.
No.
You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I am going to be working on this podcast, working on cooking up some starting pitcher stuff. So we'll see when that stuff starts coming out. You can also find more of my work over at Baseball HQ. But that will do it for this episode number 143 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all in a couple weeks.